Our second case this morning is United States against Ferguson. Counsel for the defense, you may proceed.
Chief Judge Efron, honorable judges, may it please the court. There is one issue before the court today, and that is whether public view includes the act of exposing oneself via private online video transmission to a recipient who requests such images and it therefore constitutes indecent exposure. The plain reading of the elements of this article, or this then Article 134 offense, indicate appellants...
Can I ask, does that mean this is a plea case and the appellant said, was asked a number of times by the military judge whether he could be certain whether there are other people on the other end of the room, in the room with the alleged, you know, the 14-year-old non-boy. Are you saying that public view could not include, as a matter of fact, a situation where there were others in the room?
No, Your Honor. It could, in fact, include a situation where there were other members in the room, but the facts of the case indicate that when appellant was first asked who was the audience, he responded, Brad and 14. And it was only upon the leading question of the military judge, could there be other people in the room, that he said, yes, Your Honor, there could have been. But could have been doesn't rise to the level of what is a factual basis for supporting a plea that in plain view is in the view of public as a whole.
So your view is public view can constitute others in a room, but only if you know they're there?
It would seem that it would be public, a public exposure, and that you're exposing yourself to a public view versus just one individual where it was private. It seems that under the public view analysis, there would have to be some indication that it was to the general public who is unsuspecting or uninterested.
How about in a plea context where you don't know the answer to the question?
I think there's an instance.
You don't have to plead then if you don't know the answer to the question. But he said, you follow, I mean, it makes it more complicated for your side of the issue when you're in a plea context. But your substantial fact then is, the substantial fact that gives you a basis to challenge this on a plea context is the lack of knowledge as to whether there are others in the room.
Yes, Ron, because the willful intent portion of the element of indecent exposure requires that it was an intentional exposure to public view, not just to a private individual. So the fact that there could have been others doesn't rise to the level of, at least in, rise to the level of public view as anticipated by United States versus Graham in the previous cases.
What should the judge have done? What did the judge do wrong?
Well, the judge, definition of public view to one or another was perhaps could have more adequately defined public view and what exactly public view was, that it would have to be to a member of the public.
That's an abuse of discretion?
Yes, Your Honor.
Would this be a different case if the undercover agent had not actually asked for the exposure?
I think it could be a different case, Your Honor, if he hadn't asked. But in this situation, he not only asked one or two, but several times, and then continued to ask for more videos and pictures. So it appears that he was interested in receiving the information. There is no evidence to suggest that a third person was present when the images were transmitted, and the transcripts of the chats indicate that the appellant had no interest other than Brad and H14 seeing the transmissions. And both parties during the course of the chats expressed caution about the disclosure of the information, and both parties left the chats when another person entered the room. Secondly, the purported audience, or the victim in this case, the undercover detective, had engaged in several sexual conversations, both requesting the pictures and videos of the appellant and commenting on how much he enjoyed the videos of the appellant showing his interest. As this court held in United States versus Graham, in order for an indecent exposure conviction to be legally sufficient, the evidence must show the exposure was, among other things, willful, indecent, and in public view. The elements of the indecent exposure were that the accused exposed a certain part of the accused body to the public view in an indecent manner, that the exposure was willful and wrongful, and that under the circumstances that the accused conduct was to the prejudice of good order, discipline, and the armed forces, or was of a nature to bring discredit to the armed forces. Applying Graham, the willfulness element of criminal intent requires that to establish intent where the act did not occur in a public place, or otherwise certain to be observed, it needs some further evidence, or in this case, an adequate factual basis to support the plea of indecent exposure.
Well, wouldn't the fact that he responded to the request by voluntarily exposing himself establish willfulness? And isn't that really what Graham turns on?
Your Honor, you could say that it was willful in the fact that he
could have said, no, I don't want to expose myself.
Yes, Your Honor, he could have, but willful in this definition, under the explanation section, says it's a willful means and intentional exposure to public view. So it's not just the willfulness.
Well, Graham didn't turn, as I understand it, on whether the person viewing was surprised or, you know, taken aback by the exposure.
Yes, Your Honor.
It turned on whether the exposure took place. And public view was really a concomitant of willfulness, wasn't it, in Graham?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And here you've got a situation where, please expose yourself. Okay, exposure takes place. Isn't that enough to show willfulness? Regardless of whether it took place in public or not.
Not under the elements of the offense as indicated in the UCMJ, certainly perhaps another offense, but this particular offense requires that it was willful and wrongful and that it occurred in a public view in an indecent manner. So in this case, a statement supporting a plea of guilt is mere supposition on the part of the appellant during the provenance inquiry, and it's inconsistent with the stipulation of fact concerning appellant's wish to keep the exposure private. The appellant was alone in his dorm room, and the audience was not a public audience. It was an exclusive audience of one, the undercover police detective. And immediately before starting the live video feed, the appellant expressly inquired as to whether or not Brad NH 14 was alone and received affirmative assurances that no one else was present.
But counsel, I don't think that you can make the argument that a single person can't be a member of the public. I mean, I think that what you should be focusing on, and maybe I'm wrong, is the fact that it was a member of the potential public that asked for the viewing, and that indecent exposure, as I understood it, was intended to protect the public from unwanted, undesired, surprise viewings that they hadn't asked for or anticipated.
Yes, Your Honor, and if I've suggested that it can't be just to one person, that is incorrect. The focus, as this court held in Graham, is on the victim because the purpose of criminalizing a public indecency act is to protect the public from shocking and embarrassing displays of sexual activities. And in this case, there's no indication that the audience, the detective, was shocked and embarrassed or had any, at least expressed any shocking views towards the exposure.
Did the detective testify either in person or via stipulation or otherwise?
No, Your Honor. The continued request for the material indicate a party, the detective, invited the exposure, and the responses indicated the party remained interested and continued to receive such videos and pictures. There's a similar case under the Navy Marine Corps Court of Criminal Appeal opinion in United States versus Hochmeyer, and it's persuasive in this case. In that case, the lower court considered circumstances which were very similar to this case, and the lower court found that a plea to indecent exposure lacked a factual basis, where the appellant was in the privacy of his room and the private online live webcam transmission in which the appellant exposed himself was viewed only by an undercover detective who was posing as a teenager, and as such was neither unsuspecting nor uninterested. Likewise, in this case, appellant's exposure is a result of a developing connection between two consenting adults. An appellant and Brad, NH 14, engaged in several conversations online each of which became progressively more sexual in nature. The gist of the chats was that Brad, NH-14, was neither unsuspecting nor uninterested.
What in the record demonstrates whether this communication could or could not have been viewed by other persons?
The only indication in the record that it could have been viewed by another member of the public is when the military judge asked who the audience was, and the appellant responded, Brad, NH-14, and then the military judge said, could there have been somebody else in the room? And the appellant responded that, yes, there could. Also, appellant in the province inquiry said it was indecent because it could have been viewed by the public. But there's no indication in the record that such an online transmission from appellant to the recipient in this case could have been viewed by anybody else via computer, only if, in fact, somebody was in the room.
We don't know one way or another.
No, Your Honor.
So as a matter of technology, which I don't claim to know myself, do you know, is it physically impossible for someone else to have been in the same chat that they were in or in the same transmission that they were engaged in? Or do you know?
It is my understanding that it would be physically impossible for another person to
Now I'm talking about electronically. I'm not talking about the vagaries about whether someone else was in the room or was not in the room. I'm talking about whether they would have been able to electronically intercept or be engaged in the transmission.
No, Your Honor, there's no indication that electronic transmissions from one individual to another during the course of a chat would be able to be seen or accessed by any other member of the public.
Can you restate the question? What in the record indicates that they were engaged in a private chat versus a chat room chat at the time this all occurred? Do you follow? If they were in a chat room, other people could have been in the chat room, but if they were in a private chat that had derived from the chat room, in theory, they were in a private chat. But is there material in this record that indicates what was going on, including in the stipulation of fact? It's a question, not a statement.
Yes, Your Honor.
Because the government obviously takes a different view in their brief on page 10. They're saying this stuff was subject to being intercepted. And does the record reflect what kind of chat they were having in terms of technologically speaking, chat room or private chat?
Yes, Your Honor.
You can do that on rebuttal if you'd like, because
yes, Your Honor.
My guess is the government will answer some questions on this while they're up here.
Yes, Your Honor, and it appears that the initial confrontation or interest between the parties was a chat, a chat that would be accessible to others, but that all of the information that occurred during the course of the transmissions of the exposures and the other material that the appellant sent, that was all done within a private chat room only between appellant and recipient, and no other individual would be.
No monitors, in terms of a chat room monitor. Would he have access to it? We don't know that, do we?
We don't. The record does not sit.
So in the context of a guilty plea, we don't know. In the context of a contested case, if the government had introduced evidence just like in this case, that is, but it would be testimony of a third party testifying that the communication could have been viewed by a third person in a room, and that the communication was through a chat room as opposed to some kind of secure monitor. Under Jackson against Virginia, would that be legally sufficient evidence to sustain a conviction?
I believe so, Your Honor, in that.
If it's legally sufficient evidence to sustain a conviction, why isn't it sufficient then for a guilty plea?
In this case, we don't know, and the record shows that the chats themselves indicate that appellant was trying to keep the information from being seen.
I understand that. My question is, if all that was said in this case, instead of it coming from the accused mouth, had come from other parties testifying as witnesses, why wouldn't that be legally sufficient to sustain a conviction?
Your Honor, because even though there was no testimony by a detective, the nature of the chats and the fact that they were not out in the open, it would make it factually it would not permit the court to find that it was a provident plea, given the factual basis is not.
Now, my question is, if this had been a contested case, and yes, I'll try to make it real quick.
Yes, Your Honor.
If this had been a contested case and all the testimony in the case consisted of what the accused said here, but instead of it coming from the accused's mouth, it came from the other participants in the conversation, would that be legally sufficient to sustain a conviction?
That the other participants that testified would have been able to see?
Right, they said that there could, another person could have seen this and that the conversations took place in the chat room and that they weren't sent over an encrypted, and there's no evidence that it was sent over an encrypted medium.
It seemed that that would support a finding that it was legally and factually sufficient in that case.
That answers my question. Thank you. You'll have an opportunity on rebuttal. Counsel for the government.
May it please the court, my name is Captain Joseph Kugler, and along with Colonel Douglas Cordova, I represent the United States in this matter.
What is the basis for your statement that a third party could have intercepted the transmissions?
Well, Your Honor,
does that mean hack into the line, or does that mean gain access to?
Well, Your Honor, the record isn't entirely clear on the exact nature of the computer interaction on 3 May 2007, but if you look at Joint Appendix page 133, that's the stipulation of fact. And if you look at paragraph 5 of that stipulation, it describes an interaction between the two via Yahoo Instant Messenger, where it says, and the last sentence is where I would direct the court's attention, the accused exposure of his penis to a person he believed to be a 14-year-old boy via Yahoo Instant Messenger program, via the internet, and under circumstances in which a third party could have intercepted the transmissions was public, indecent, and under the circumstances willful and wrongful of a nature to bring discredit upon the armed forces. So that, of course...
So he's admitted to it whether it's true or not.
Your Honor, well, he's admitted to it, and I, like the judge, am relying on his admissions in court that it was, in fact, public and that someone could, in fact, have intercepted and viewed it. But... the government's position...
Is there anything in paragraph 3 that would support that statement? It's a question, not a challenge.
In paragraph 3 of the stipulation of fact?
Right. In terms of describing how they're doing this, the chat room stuff, and who's a friend of whom, and all that stuff. I mean...
It does, towards the middle of the paragraph, describe it as a chat room. The list allows you to receive notification.
Well, you've answered my question. The basis of your statement is simply to repeat the statement in the stipulation of fact.
Correct.
You're not pulling something else out from the record somewhere.
No, Your Honor. That statement in the stipulation of fact and its admissions to the military judge at trial where he said there could have been someone else who viewed it. But it's the government's position that under the definition of public view in United States versus Graham, there's no requirement for a third party, as pointed out by this court. And public view is clearly defined, more explicitly than I've seen most things defined in any opinion. Public view means in the view of the public, and in that context, public is a noun referring to any member of the public. It is that definition of public view that governs the offense of indecent exposure in the military.
Well, counsel, let's say in this case that all we had in the record was that the only person that could possibly have viewed this exposure was the person who had requested that the exposure take place. You're not suggesting that would satisfy the element, are you?
Yes, Your Honor, because I would frame it as acquiesce to an ongoing seduction between the appellant and Brad M14, who he believed to be a 14-year-old child.
But this isn't about seduction.
No, it's not. Not, Your Honor. But the unsuspecting language that's cited in United States versus Graham speaks directly to the components that are used to analyze the indecency of the action. And we, of course, believe that it's important to consider that in terms of whether or not the underlying exposure was indecent. But in United States versus Graham, it starts by saying that it's not a case about indecency because it didn't. Nor is this a case about whether the appellant's exposure was indecent. And then it discusses.
Well, I mean, it could be indecent, but not be indecent exposure. I mean, I don't think you're going to find a lot of people are going to say, wow, this is a great idea. Okay, but how does it become indecent exposure as this court has interpreted it and as it was intended to be interpreted if it's at the result of someone's request?
Well, I think the elements need to be analyzed separately. Was it exposure to someone in public view, which is a member of the public, and that whether you consider Brad N. H. 14 to be the 14-year-old that the accused believed he was, or Detective McLaughlin, sorry, Your Honor, of Keene, New Hampshire, it was in fact a member of the public. And then you ask the question of indecency. When you analyze indecency, certainly whether or not the information was surprising or uninvited or unsuspected goes towards that. But in this case, it was a child.
Well, let's say that we have a situation where we have two people in a chat room and nobody else can get into it. That is only the two of them. And they are both adults. And it is a secure connection. And one of them says, please send me this video. And the other one sends them the video. Would that constitute an offense?
No, because in Your Honor's example, it wouldn't be indecent for two consenting adults to decide.
Well, okay, now wait a minute. And here we have
an
individual who is a police detective, who is an adult, who asked this appellant to send him this.
The appellant has stated clearly in the record on numerous occasions that he believed that he was speaking with a 14-year-old child. So his action of sending the real-time transmissions of himself doing things to himself is indecent under that analysis. Had they had a conversation and he introduced himself as Detective McLaughlin from Keene, New Hampshire.
So the only distinction here in this case is the age of the individual victim or however you want to say it.
Between your hypothetical, yes.
Okay, so the age here, the fact that he believed that this individual was 14 is critical to the government's position.
If we're to ignore his statements in the record that someone could have seen it and that it was public, and to ignore the stipulation of fact and go with a hypothetical where it was just the two of them and no one else could have seen it, yes, that would be the distinction. And in the government's view, that would be a significant distinction. Just as in Graham, the babysitter was alone in the room with an adult, his exposure was considered indecent, clearly indecent. In this case, for him to expose himself to a person that he believed was a 14-year-old child is indecent. The question of whether or not it's in public view is a separate analysis in the government's position that needs to be conducted by analyzing the definition of public view that's set out at the end of United States versus Graham, which basically states that it needs to be any member of the public, that in the view of any member of the public. I think it's telling that the appellant takes the two words from United States versus Graham that are used to analyze whether or not it's indecent or to dismiss the indecency and tries to graft it to the very clear definition of public view that comes at the end of United States versus Graham without discussing indecency, because it would go beyond the pale to describe this conduct as anything other than indecent. The court below analyzed it correctly and found it was indecent because of the nature of the conduct, that this conduct was a culmination of the continuing course of conduct, and that it was sent to a person the appellant believed was a 14-year-old. The appellant admits himself in the record that he did this to incite lust in a child, and that's on Joint Appendix 88. He also admits that he thought the recipient was a minor, that's on Joint Appendix 86. There is no confusion in the record about who he believed he was sending this to.
So, counsel, go ahead. Go ahead.
So is it the intervening electronic transmission? Because here's A and here's 14-year-old, and they're in the same room, and he's got a towel around him, and he drops it. That's Graham.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Now, here's A, here's putative 14-year-old, here's electronic transmission. Let's assume for purpose of argument that he's really 14.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, here's A, here's 14 years old, here's electronic transmission. Does that render Graham not Graham?
No, Your Honor. I think if you look at United States versus Miller, this court remanded down, and I think that the virtual presence is enough. Graham is, in indecent exposure cases, are essentially that one would act in a way in which others would reasonably.
Well, of course, physical presence, you know, unlike liberties, where physical presence is an element, physical presence isn't an element here.
Correct. And that is why I'm trying, what I'm inarticulately explaining is I don't think there's a hindrance to indecent exposure through webcams or other electronic means, because there is no requirement of physical presence that is required with indecent liberties.
Okay.
As was pointed out in United States versus Miller.
Okay, so no difference between the physical and the webcam approach. Take two situations in which, let's assume the facts are entirely identical, and that is the person who is the recipient of the exposure invites it. Is there an age at which one is indecent and the other is not? Two identical situations, invited exposure. One is by a person who is over a particular age. One is by a person who is under a particular age. Is there an age at which that one is permissible and the other is criminal?
Your Honor, I suppose I would 16, the age of consent, would be a reasonable line to draw if there were such line drawn. Again,
well, is that then the touchstone here? That is that the person who is under that age cannot actually issue the invitation because they're not able to consent, and that's why it is indecent?
I think it's one of the factors that needs to be considered.
And is that why it's an exposure? Well, in other words, what makes this an indecent exposure if we've boiled it down to an invitation, two individuals, exact same circumstance, and the only difference is age? What makes one an indecent exposure and the other not an indecent exposure?
In this case, it would be the age and the manner in which this all came about, which
I'm not asking about the case before specifically. I'm asking a hypothetical to try to ascertain what the decisional point is here.
Okay, Your Honor. And I believe age would be a critical factor to consider. Another consideration would be the history of how it all came about. And in other words, and I know you're asking in generality, not specifically.
Right. No, it's in which there'd be two identical situations in which age is the only difference.
But like the court below, they looked at the fact that this was, when they analyzed indecency, the first thing that they discussed was, or second point, was that it was a culmination of a course of conduct that began when the appellant had, in fact, met the individual on a chat room introduced himself, and the first thing he said was, "Have we chatted before?" was what Brad 14 responded. And he said, "No, I'm looking at your Hi5," which is a social networking website. And then he introduces himself as 14, and within 11 minutes, he's calling the child a hottie.
Well, to follow up on Judge Efron's question and your response that the age here is critical,
yes, sir.
What do you do with the language in Graham, where the court there said that appellant exposed himself to a 15-year-old girl who was completely unrelated and uninvolved with him? And then the court said, and who neither invited nor consented to his conduct. So there, the court was looking at a 15-year-old girl, but also considering that invitation and consent was an element that they were going to look at.
Correct, John.
And so here we have assuming that he believed this was a 14-year-old kid, which I think he did, who invited it and consented it. Consented to it.
And Your Honor, that language, again, and I'm not sure I disagree with what you're saying, but that language, again, is couched in the terms of asking whether or not the conduct itself is indecent.
Exactly.
Right. And
and there they are looking at a 15-year-old child and saying this child did not invite or consent to the conduct. Okay, here we have a situation where the individual, 15, 40, whatever, did invite and consent to the conduct.
And if we're addressing whether or not the facts below satisfy the requirement for this conduct to be indecent, I think that's been clearly met through the questions asked by the military judge of the appellant in the care inquiry, where he asked why it was indecent. He admitted that one of the reasons why he believed it was indecent was because he was trying to incite the lust of a 14-year-old child.
That doesn't answer my question. My question is, how does this language in Graham impact on the case that's before us today?
My answer is, I believe it's important. One of the factors, uninvited and unsuspecting, is one of the factors that needs to be looked at when looking at indecency.
And we're looking at indecency.
Yeah, and if we're discussing whether or not this conduct was indecent, I believe that the military judge appropriately examined the appellant at the trial level, that the appellant admitted the conduct was indecent, that the language in the stipulation of fact made admissions that it was decent, and the judge appropriately relied on the appellant's belief that what he did was in fact indecent, and that the lower court, the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals, correctly described the conduct as indecent.
Counsel, I think that I'm not exactly understanding, exactly understanding your argument. As I read Graham, what you need to show here is one of two things. Either that this exposure was in public view, because it wasn't just the two of them, okay? There was a third party available, and that we can read the stipulation of fact and the interchange with the military judge to say that there's enough that we don't have a substantial doubt as to that fact, okay? Or alternatively, you would need to show that it is nonetheless within public view because the individual was surprised or shocked. That Graham isn't talking about whether it was indecent. It was talking about whether, despite the fact that it was not in public per se, in other words, it was in a private home, it could nonetheless be an indecent exposure because it was public view because the person was surprised or shocked. Do you understand the distinction?
I understand the distinction.
So which do you think you have the stronger argument on? That it was a public view because, in fact, we can read the record to be satisfied that there was a third person, either actually or potentially there, or in the alternative, because we should read the record that this person did, that the detective didn't invite him and was somehow surprised, because nothing in Graham, as far as I read it, had any bearing. The fact that the person was 15 years old had no bearing whatsoever on it, because they weren't talking about indecency. They were talking about how it could be a public place, despite the fact it was in a private home.
Correct, John. And I'm not sure if I which one is stronger, but I would say both are in the record and clearly based in this case. He had made admissions that they're
pretty good. Well, how is the second one in the record and clearly based? What's in the record and clearly based in, with respect to the second is that it was invited and that it wasn't a surprise and it wasn't a shock.
Right, the government reads Graham differently to say that if it's not in public view in terms of, you know, outdoors or Mardi Gras type situation, that the question is, as defined at the end, whether or not he took actions that would have made it in the view of a member of the public. And we don't think that the fact that there's been a conversation between these two for several days, between a person he believes to be a child and the appellant, divests him of his status as a member of the public. There hasn't been a relationship, he hasn't been transformed into a spouse, a girlfriend, or anything of the sort. But the language, we believe, when it speaks to uninvited and unsuspecting, that instead we believe is appropriate when looking at whether or not the conduct, the exposure in the first instance, is indecent in any way. But we do believe that there's sufficient material in the record for the military judge to have relied upon the appellant's statements that it was in fact public, that a third party could have seen it, both from the stipulation of fact and from the admissions made in the record. And I see my time is about to expire, so if I may briefly conclude.
You may.
Appellant has made sufficient admissions in the record, and they're contained in the record, that this was public and could be viewed by a third party. However, the government's position is that even aside from that, even to assume that these two were the only two that were engaged in that chat session, a simple application of the facts to the clear definition of public view in United States versus Grant demonstrates that the appellant's plea is satisfied in all of the elements of indecent exposure. And we would ask that you affirm the findings of the court below. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have a rebuttal?
Yes, sir. While the stipulation in paragraph 5 does say that a third party could have intercepted, there's no place in the stipulation that talks about whether a third party could have intercepted during the course of the May 3rd transmissions, the internet transmissions between the appellant and the recipient. Additionally, in paragraph 3 of the stipulation, in the middle of the paragraph, it says, adding someone to a friends list allows a user to receive a notification whenever that friend enters a chat room. So if in fact this were a chat, which I believe it's actually an instant messaging and not a chat, but if it were in fact a chat, the friend would receive the notification, and based on the additional chats between appellant and recipient, they were both cautious about leaving the IM when another person showed up in a room, physically in a room, not in a chat room. So the record supports that it was not factually sufficient to support a plea in that a third party could have intercepted, but nobody knew. Additionally, the government suggests that the indecent acts on this are a continuing course of conduct and the age and manner of which they took place should affect the court's decision. The elements of indecent exposure are clear. They don't have necessarily an age requirement. And if it's truly a continuing course of conduct which is indecent, it's wholly subsumed by Specification 1 and Charge 1 of this on the charge sheet, where appellant attempted to send obscene material during the overly inclusive period of time. And for those reasons, we would ask that this court find that there is not public view, and therefore appellant cannot be found guilty of indecent exposure.
Not public view or not indecent exposure? But are you limiting your argument now that there was no public view?
I'm saying that there was no public view, and therefore there couldn't be indecent exposure.
Okay.
I wouldn't.
Are you conceding that the exposure was indecent?
I would say that an exposure would be indecent.
Okay.
Thank you, counsel. We thank counsel for both parties for your presentation today. The case is now submitted, and the court will be in recess until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow morning.